Westinghouse Labor, June 5th, 9 a.m. hearing on D, tape 161.
Man. Where's the rest of our committee?
They're in the hallway being lobbied.
Are they? Do you want to go out and ask them to come in and we can start?
We're going to deviate from the agenda briefly and start with Senate Bill 656.
Yeah, what I'd like to do this morning is give just a brief discussion on 656, kind of what the things are being proposed. And we'll probably do that for just maybe a five-minute period. And then we're going to close the hearing on that because we're going to have a session tomorrow morning at, I think it's at 8:30. I think it's in a hearing room E that we'll have the information at that point knowing what we want to do. So I'm going to ask Mr. Satchel to come up and perhaps just give us a brief description of what is being proposed. Is he here? This idea, I think, has been in the works for some time, and I know there's been some discussion among some different groups. And if you could just sort of tell us what the concepts are. I know we don't have all the figures. And then we will have a meeting. Is it 8:30 tomorrow?
Yeah, in this room.
In hearing room E, I thought somebody said.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be in D?
Yeah, in this
here?
Room.
Here? Okay. So we will have a meeting tomorrow morning at 8:30 when we get the figures put together. So would you want to give us a concept and we'll go from there?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Don Satchel, speaking on behalf of the Oregon Education Association Coalition of Public Employees. This is a very difficult issue that we're confronting here, and we will be speaking tomorrow in support of 656 with amendments, trying to develop a program that does provide an adjustment for benefits to individuals based upon the amount of money they receive and the length of time that they have provided service to the state of Oregon. So it will be a variable schedule. It will be a schedule which we believe will be able to basically be funded through the earnings and PERS and will not cost any general fund dollars, will not cause the rates of the provider, the employers, to go up beyond that which it already is, and will allow for a rate reduction. It's a program which we believe that will be in agreement by management and by the employers and by members of this body, we hope. So basically there will be unanimous support on the agreement. It also will provide some provisions for seeking legal position and opinion in regards to it so that everyone is protected, state employees, employers.
Okay. Any questions? Okay. Did you want to cover any more than that on the plan, or you want to leave it at that?
We are currently working with the actuaries to make sure that all the numbers are correct and legal counsel make sure all the language is correct so that we don't provide you with any incorrect information. So rather than to get into the specifics of it, I would prefer that we wait until we know exactly what those are so that we are absolutely correct.
Okay.
The amendments will be available after the hearing. Okay. They're printed, although they won't release them.
Yeah, and I believe that the actuary was in Seattle yesterday and had to come back from Seattle, so he's somewhere between Seattle and here, and as soon as he gets here, he'll run those numbers and we'll have those numbers too, which will be needed for the amendment.
Well, you can get them out of my office after 1 o'clock.
After 1 o'clock today? Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we would like to bring back Senate Bill 962. I spoke to the speaker, and if you remember, that's the one that we are going to set aside the $25,000 for in a scholarship fund. And the speakers agreed that we don't have to send that to Ways and Means where it could get lost. So I'd like to have unanimous consent to bring that bill back.
We need to suspend the rules.
Yeah, okay, we need to suspend the rules.
I move we suspend the rules to allow us to hear Senate Bill 962.
Okay, any objections? Okay.
I need a motion to rescind your referral to Ways and Means.
So move.
Okay. Any objections?
And a motion to do pass it to the floor, please.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we send House Senate Bill 962 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Any discussion?
Good job.
With amendments.
Good job.
With amendments.
With amendments, as amended.
Thank you.
Any discussion? Can you call a roll, please?
Would you describe your amendment?
Yes, we changed substantially.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Manning?
Aye.
Representative Repine?
Aye.
Representative White?
Aye.
Representative Dominic?
Here.
Aye. I hear, yes.
Yes.
Representative Dorfman.
Aye. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Bob, is you're sort of up. You want to carry that one?
If I'm up, Mr. Chairman, I'm ready.
Thank you.
It's ready.
I didn't know we were on a chart, but okay.
Well, we're sort of keeping track, so it's kind of even though.
We are on a chart.
Who's on deck? What? What's on
second?
What's on first?
Second.
Okay.
What's on second?
Who's on first?
Who's on
first? So you can close the work session.
We're going to close the work session on Senate Bill, or we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 829.
Gentlemen, Senate Bill 829 is the bill that would repeal the exemption for safety committees. You have in your packet amendments that part of the parties involved here agreed to. What these amendments would do is require employer members of multi-employer groups that have safety committees operating under a collective bargaining agreement to meet or exceed the minimum requirements of the current law with regard to safety committee standards.
Okay.
There is no fiscal impact on this.
There was?
Is none.
There is none, okay. We had, I think Gary Wilhelms, did you want to come up with your gentleman from U.S.? You had a statement that you wanted to make, and then I think John Gervais and the electrical people have met and reached agreement on it from them. Thank you for coming today.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Gary Wilhelms, and I'm Director of Government Relations with U.S. West Communications. And with me today, who will be making the statement actually for U.S. West, is Mr. Steve Valentik, who is our Oregon Southwest Washington Field Safety Manager. He works on a day-to-day basis with the subject that we're addressing with this bill and is fully competent to make the statement, so I'd like to turn it over to him at this point.
Hey, Steve, thank you for coming this morning.
Thank you. U.S. West is currently granted an exemption from the safety committee requirements contained in ORS Chapter 654 based on our bargaining agreement with the respective unions representing our employees. We have always found it beneficial to employ the use of safety committees. It is our understanding that the legislature intends to remove the exemption granted relating to the bargaining agreements. U.S. West does not object to the removal of the exemption so long as we agree on the definition of joint committees, where joint means management and non-management employees working in a cooperative effort to achieve safety in the workplace, and specifically that joint does not mean management and labor representatives with bargaining agreements representing our employees. Furthermore, that in the Safety Committee Rules 437-40-045, Safety Committees, Innovation, that the language stays intact listed in Article 10, and I'll quote that as, upon application, the division may approve safety committees which are innovative or differ in form or function when such committees meet the intent of these rules. While it is our intention as an employer to work cooperatively with labor representatives of our employees, we foresee greater flexibility and effectiveness in promoting safety and health in the workplace by meeting the intent of the safety committee rules.
Okay. Where is joint committees in the bill?
It's in the rules. It spells that it's joint, and we interpret that to mean occupational or non-management and management employees.
In our OSHA's rules?
Right.
Steve, you're comfortable with the amendments that are as written, though?
Yes, I am.
Okay, good. Well, we appreciate your help.
Thank you.
Can I ask this quickly?
Yes.
The amendment that we have here, these dash one amendments, deal with multi-employer groups, and that wouldn't apply to you, would it? You're not a multi or one.
It would, Representative Edmondson, it would not apply to us. We're willing to take the outright repeal of the exemption and come under OSHA's rules. After communicating with OSHA, we found that we do not have a problem as long as the rules remain the way they are, basically are, as Mr. Valentik has stated.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much both for coming to testify. Any other questions? John, did you want to come up and
do the dash ones?
Yeah.
Do you have anyone else that...
just myself.
Okay.
What's
that for
that? Oh, thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. For the record, my name is John Gervais, representing the National Electrical Contractors Association. At your original hearing on Senate Bill 829, we raised some strong concerns in regard to the application of the outright repeal as it would relate to our joint committee under the collective bargaining agreement. We're very pleased to have the opportunity to work with Oregon OSHA and Jack Pompey and others, and the amendment that's been offered is an agreed-to amendment between the department and us, and we think it'll work very well. We don't want to create anything that creates a lesser standard. We just want a working kind of situation that where we have people coming off the bench so we can train everybody uniformly and hopefully effectively. And so we feel that this will be a good, responsible, compromise position on that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for your help.
Appreciate the committee's indulgence and willingness to give us time to work on it.
We appreciate your work on it. Thank you very much.
Are we in work session?
We're in work session.
Mr. Chairman, I move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 829.
Okay. Any objections? Hearing passes.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I move the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Any discussion? Would you call the roll, please?
We're moving now.
Representative Edmondson?
Certainly. Yes.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Manning?
Aye.
Representative Repine?
Aye.
Representative Dominic?
Aye.
You know he's here.
Representative Duffner?
Aye. Sam, would you want to carry that one? Is that one okay? Okay, thank you.
That's the one that allows environmentalists to.
Yeah, right. Okay, we're going to open up the work session on Senate Bill 1191. Pardon me?
Gentlemen, Senate Bill 1191 came to you from the Senate setting up unemployment compensation benefits, additional benefits for dislocated workers. Dislocated workers is defined within the bill as structurally unemployed workers. The amendments that you have before you to this bill are substantial. They are the SB 1191-A3. What they do is they keep intact the definitions that were in Senate Bill 1191, but they require that the additional benefits be available to these dislocated workers, these eligible workers who are in training. The training would be provided through a JTPA program or an approved program as approved by the Assistant Director of the Employment Division. And and what this bill does technically is it modifies the current vocational unemployment benefit statutes. And these are under the current law, people who are in training can get their regular benefits although they're not required to look for work or be available for work during that 26 weeks. This bill also specifies that the JTPA people and community colleges or the service providers will work as a policy matter to provide intensified training so that these people can get their training in the least amount of time. That you'll find on page 3 in the bold are 5 policy statements to this regard. Finally, something that has been done that to align the bill a little bit more currently with Representative Katz's educational bill, instead of calling the training in here vocational training, it is going to be professional technical training and headed in that direction at any rate.
So we've got 2 buzzwords in this.
Yeah,
structural unemployment and
structurally unemployed.
If we do nothing else, we can amend the language.
Professional technical training.
And I thought I was going to get out of this session without having to learn how to spell paradigm.
Is that like paradigm watching?
Here.
Yeah.
Okay, Holly Miles, would you want to help?
I didn't point out to you, gentlemen, that this bill has a sunset provision for 2 years to treat it like a pilot program and require that the participants come back and report to the 1993 legislature with some hard data with regard to its success.
Thank you for coming this morning.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Holly Miles. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Consortium, which is the JTPA service provider for the 27 non-metropolitan counties of the state of Oregon. And I've just looked at the amendments, and I only want to make one comment, and that is that we would really urge you to consider an emergency clause. After hearing from the dislocated workers that you heard from on Friday, some of them are really reaching a time or have not been able to access those benefits, and without an emergency clause, it would mean that many of them may have to stop training and go back to work. So we would just urge your consideration of that fact.
I'm not sure if you can answer this question, but say mills that close down, there may not be a total close down, but a significant reduction in force. And workers who, for whatever reason, they're reduced in force. Maybe they are disabled workers who have reemployment rights, and there's basically a layoff for them. Is your understanding that this would cover those individuals as well? Because there's not a complete shutdown, but perhaps reemployment rights under a union contract or as a matter of law, or their jobs are no longer available to them. Would they be eligible for this? They seem to be just as much a casualty of the economic slowdown as.
For the record, I'm Lori Swanson, and I'm the director of the Southern Willamette Private Industry Council that serves Lane County. And we thought we'd come together as the 2 JTPA folks.
I appreciate it. I think Lane County is facing a lot of slowdowns and reduction.
And from that standpoint, in Lane County, we have dealt with slowdowns, partial layoffs, indefinite layoffs rather than permanent closures and so forth. And as it stands right now, the workers do qualify as dislocated workers after they've been laid off for 60 days. So with the Bohemia Mill that in Culp Creek down in Lane County, what happened is there was an indefinite closure there, and after 60 days they qualified. They didn't qualify immediately, but they were able to, because that was one of the technical issues. So now the folks that are there after that 2-month lag were able to qualify them in a declining industry, that being timber resource-based, and they would qualify.
Okay, so then if a worker had, for example, been disabled and was out on medical leave and came, and then the doctor released them to go back to the mill, they go back to the mill and they ask for their job back, and they're told that job's no longer available because we've scaled way back and we have nothing for you anymore, they would qualify as dislocated workers because if it were not for the slowdown in the operation of the mill, they would be entitled to employment.
my answer is going to be, I'm not sure. It's probably, part of the issue has to do with how long ago that occurred. Did it occur in 1978, or did it occur in 1983, or did it occur in 1991?
They have three, I think it's 3 years of rights for reemployment.
So
I just want to make sure those people are protected.
That might be something, as an aside, we may want to address in rules.
Thank you. I guess we may have some other witnesses, but I just want that to at least be part of the intent of this law, that nobody slipped through the cracks because of their health.
Mr. Chairman,
I had another question. I had a note here that there was if possible, we should put an emergency clause on this bill, and I wondered if you could address that.
They just spoke to that.
Okay.
That was going to be my same comment, Representative Brown.
I'd like to get Steve and Brawley up, because I have some questions about whether that would work or not. If there's not training dollars there, the benefits aren't going to get.
Yeah, with the opportunity to get on to stay on unemployment while training right away would be a key. Am I understanding it right?
That we have people right now in training funded through JPPA, through discretionary grants and so forth, who have training to finish up, whose unemployment insurance is or has already run.
It has been, and just recently extended another, 6 weeks and another 13 weeks?
Right, but in Lane County, over about 50% of our folks are finishing up from closures a year ago or 18 months ago. And so it's those folks that their training dollars are covered, but not their unemployment insurance.
Even with their extended benefits that they have, they just got an additional 13 weeks.
Right. It's just getting real close. And so by the time the legislature finishes your action and so forth, an emergency clause would make a big difference in the lives of many of the dislocated workers.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to ask Steve Tager and Ms. Brawl if they'll come up, because we have some. I know both of you have sat in on lots of meetings on this subject, and I think that opportunity has been available for everybody on the committee. Steve, what I'd like to have you do, if you would just basically go through the program of what we're trying to accomplish with this so that everybody understands it, if you do that, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Steve Tager with the Employment Division, and with me is Bill Brawley from the
start at the beginning of
JTPA program, and Rick Levine from the Office of Community College Services. This set of amendments that you have in front of you is the result of a considerable collaborative effort between the three entities and between members of the committee and members of the Senate to come to something that we felt would work, would meet the concerns of everybody involved, and would also meet the fiscal limitations in terms of the capacity for training and where the training dollars were going to come from. Let me point out that page 4 of the proposed amendments, the new subsection 3 that you see, let me start with page 5, section 4. This is a rewrite of existing law, but I wanted to point out that what we're doing here is refocusing the vocational unemployment insurance program in existing law, refocusing that on the dislocated workers. What this section means, section 4, is that anybody that it gets into a JTPA training program will have the regular 26 weeks of UI benefits available to them. Okay. What the rest of the bill does, starting with the definitions on section 1 and working through, is narrows the focus or the access to the extended or supplemental benefits, the extension of the UI benefits for purposes of completing the vocational training program. And that's where the definition of structural unemployed begins to narrow the class of people that would be have access or would be eligible for the extended benefits. The actual extension of benefits is on page 4, the new subsection 3. And in this version of the bill, we have designated that it would be supplemental benefits up to 50% of the individual's most recent maximum benefit amount. That provides for an additional, at the maximum, 13 weeks of unemployment benefits, but that will be subject to whatever cap or limitation that the committee desires to place in there. At the present time, there's no cap in this bill, as there was in the Senate version of 1191. So what we've provided then is this is the maximum outside extension, 50% of the maximum benefit amount, or 13 weeks. Then if you turn over onto page 5 again, subsection 4 is the dislocated worker training benefits fund, the $8.5 million that was amended into 2252 to provide a discretionary fund that after the worker has exhausted all other available UI benefits, their regular, the federal extended benefits, the state additional benefits, the supplemental benefits that are provided in this bill, after all of those have been exhausted and the individual still needs an additional period of time to complete the training program that they're in, then on a discretionary basis, they would receive financial assistance out of that dislocated worker training benefits fund to complete their training.
Mr. Chair?
Yes?
That discretionary fund and how that'll be decided, is that all, the way this is lined up, that'll all be set by administrative rule?
Currently.
You're saying on an individual basis, I hope it doesn't have something to do with the way people part their hair. That's my...
I want
to get a clarification.
Yeah. I think that we have some set up a criteria that you can cover what
you would discuss. Well, the direct answer to your question, Representative Dominey, is that yes, we did provide in here that how that fund would be administered would be through rulemaking. We provided one criteria in the statute, which was that it would be conditioned upon the individual having demonstrated satisfactory progress and attendance in the training program. Certainly, if the committee desires to add additional criteria to guide us in the rulemaking, we would welcome that input that you want to give us.
I need a little bit of clarification. Satisfactory progress in school. What is satisfactory? If you were making the decision right now, what would you say is satisfactory progress in school?
I think we would want to look at the individual's GPA, and their attendance, some indication from the training provider that they're doing a good job in the program and that the additional investment is a good investment here to make in that individual. That's a real brief overview of what the amendments do. I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
Would you address the question that I'd asked earlier, and that being, I see on page 2 of the amendments, top of the page C, talking about long-term unemployed, limited opportunities for employment or reemployment. And under the union contracts as well as state law, workers who are been injured or disabled for some reason have reemployment and reinstatement to employment rights, mm-hmm. but they're not typically considered unemployed. They're considered disabled, even though I think they are unemployed for purposes of health insurance and things of that nature. I want to make sure that this covers those people, because if when they're released to go back to work and they return only to discover that their mill's closed down or slowed down to the point they don't have a job waiting for them through no fault of their own or their employers, that they would be eligible for this program just the same as if they had been healthy and been on the job when the layoff occurred, the slowdown occurred. So I think that C covers them, But I just want to make sure that that's a matter of the record, that those people aren't going to be denied benefits simply because they had the misfortune of being injured.
Representative Edmondson, for the record, I'm Bill Brawley with the JTPA program. I think from a JTPA perspective, those people would be eligible for dislocated worker status.
Okay. And you don't see that there's any need to clarify that in the statute, or I should have asked this, is there a need to clarify that in the statute, or is the statute as the amendments are presented clear enough to make that so there's no doubt if this question were to come up?
Representative Edmondson, I don't think anything additional would be necessary. From at least my perspective.
I think that's important to make that as a part of the record. And that's my understanding and reading of those amendments, and I just don't want there to be any question later that we somehow intended to carve out an exception here.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
This definition of dislocated worker and structurally unemployed is not limited to any particular industry, and yet we all know that the main reason we're doing this is because of the layoffs in the timber industry. Can you identify for me any other industries that you expect this to apply to?
Representative Johnson.